You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is showtime. Please welcome the team of the Fulhamish Podcast.
It's the Fulhamish Podcast, your independent voice of Fulham FC. My name is George Cooper and welcome to the show. Smiles once again across the Fulham fan base as we put the sword to Brighton and Hove Albion at home. This was another accomplished performance. It was never in doubt. This wasn't a smash and grab. This wasn't a last minute victory like last weekend's W against Old Trafford. This was just an assured performance. We outplayed them, outclassed them, outscored them. We were better in every conceivable aspect of this game. What a revelation Rodrigo Muniz is. Marco's got the boys firing on all cylinders. We are looking up the table. We are all but safe. There's plenty to talk about, and I've got three fabulous gentlemen to talk about it with. Drew Heatley's with me. How you doing, mate?
Hello, George. Yeah, you say we put him to the sword, call the RSPCA, we shanked the seagulls. What a lovely day.
We did indeed. Those gulls were there for the taking. Joms is joining us as well. Long time no see, mate. How's Vancouver treating you?
Hello, mate. It's good, thank you. As usual, it is absolutely pouring with rain here. Went out for a run this morning. Would advise anyone not to eat anything but pizza and beer for 3 weeks and then try and train for a half marathon. It does not go well. but do love the fact that we shanked some seagulls.
Excellent. Have you been having any of those weird Bloody Marys that have got burgers in them that you sent on our group chat? Because I can't stop thinking about them.
Not since I've got here, mate. I'm going to save that for when you come over next time.
Excellent. And we got JK with us as well. A very happy looking JK. How sweet was the post-victory curry that you had?
No curry. It was Thai food. Had duck and pancakes and pad thai. Not both at the same time. Like, we kind of shared it all. I didn't have two meals. That would have been monstrous. But yeah, great day. Really hungover.
Good stuff. You're a lot like Luke Littler. After Fulham have a victory, you'll treat yourself to some kind of takeaway.
Just less fat and worse looking.
Well, if you keep doing two meals, you won't be.
You got some three-word reviews for us, Jack. Would you mind yeah, kicking off, please?
I wouldn't mind, actually. Lindsay Roach at Roachy Baby goes, three great goals, which is clever. James Wilson has done seven, and I'm going to read them all out. A golden afternoon, an adamant victory, wow without Jow, three strikes gold, three golden strikes, 3 points gold, Brighton sunshiny day. Very good. And then Fulham fan news with get your passports. And finally, Jack and Loz with deserving the win.
Yeah, it was just a thoroughly deserved victory. This is a Brighton side who, I know they've had a few setbacks recently. Their fans will tell you that they're ravaged with injuries, but this is a side that are gunning for Europe, currently competing in Europe. And Drew, there was never a point where it didn't look like we were going to win this game.
No, it was. I was saying in the stands, it was a throwback to the Hodgson days where it used to be, you know, you get the 2-0 against West Brom, Zamora, Johnson, job done, see you later. That's what it felt like. It was just, you turned up from minute one, never felt like it was going to be anything other than our day, and it only took 20 minutes to go ahead. And from then, we didn't look back. Like, you know, I was surprised to see that Brighton did have 70% of the ball because, I mean, I was getting pretty steaming throughout the whole day, but... They didn't really do a lot with it, did they? And they are the media darlings, but they are our canaries, aren't they? They can't buy a win against us, which is lovely.
We always do well against Brighton at home. Even that Slavisa season where we were terrible. Drew, would you say that we are their bogey side?
100%. I think the stat I read this weekend was that only Norwich have had a worse record against us in the Premier League. So, you know, yeah, you do get the RSPCA on standby because we're fucking up all the birds. This, you know, at the moment, canaries, seagulls, you know, they're all going.
James, we got 70%. Brighton had 70% of the possession, as Drew just highlighted. I definitely thought, particularly in the first half, it was very evident that our game plan was just to sit back, let them have their ball, let them pass it across the back line, and then hit them on the counter. And like, when for you did Fulham become this counter-attacking team and have this in our arsenal? Because it's never historically been something that we've really utilised that much. We're much more almost like Brighton. We like to keep the lion's share of the possession. But it just worked so well yesterday. What impressed you about the way Marco set this Fulham team up that ultimately you think led to our victory?
I think we first become a counter-attacking team at the start of last year when we really adjusted to Premier League football right off the bat. I think when we looked at the Parker sides, they really struggled to get anywhere near Premier League level standard. Same with Slavisa, way too heavily dependent on possession to keep the game tight. And now we're just flying through transitions like some of the best teams that you see in the Premier League. I think, especially when you include some of the bodies like Iwobi, I think Iwobi is so crucial to the way we played yesterday alongside Harry Wilson. Those people are able to burst out of shape and they understand fundamentally what structure looks like because they've come from the bigger teams before. They know what it's like to hold shape, when to break out, when to drop. And I think that was the game plan yesterday, to hold in a really nice tight formation, crowd the centre of the pitch. And to be honest with you, and this is also reflected in the BBC match report, there were quite a lot of periods in that first half where the game was just dull. Like Brighton were trying to push the ball around and probe and find corners and gaps and the channels, and Fulham just didn't give them anything. And I think that was what really stood out for me was the tactical shape that we have. And I think it's so blatantly obvious that when Fulham have time to go away and analyse and come up with a game plan, we're such a better squad and such a better team. When we have a big run of games, say like you have like 4 games in 12 days, for example, like Fulham towards the end of that can kind of fall to pieces a little bit where they don't have time to go out and prepare. When you give them time to prepare, like Fulham, as we saw last week, they put on a bit of a clinic against United and they did it again yesterday against Brighton. So I think we have a lot to be very hopeful with in the run into this season. And, you know, Europe's not out of touch. In our little Fulhamish group, we have people keep saying, oh, Brentford lost, Luton lost, Everton lost. I don't think we need to worry about that whatsoever. We actually need to be looking upwards at the table now. The gap might seem a little bit big, but it's not insurmountable.
What do you think about this, Jack? I've heard a lot of people whisper in Europe, and whilst I'm very much in the optimistic camp, I still think top half is the more realistic of the aims. But where do you sit within this debate?
Yeah, I think it's a long shot, to say the least. But what's the point of being alive if you can't dream? So let's dream. Sorry, a bit discombobulated. I'm looking at the table. I would say
that Jack's becoming very poetic all of a sudden. It's nice. Are you looking at sort of like, imagine you having that in a most motivational poster in your bedroom.
That was after fortune cookie at last night's victory dinner, wasn't
it? On my doormat when I walk in the house. I think the best thing we can do this season is finish above Chelsea, which I think is doable. Only 1 point behind them now, albeit they've got a game in hand. But why not? Me and Joe were discussing the other day that, you know, the places down to eighth could qualify for Europe this season. Now, Newcastle are eighth on 40 points. We're only 5 points off them. We've still got to play them at home as well. We've still got to play Wolves next week. We've still got to play West Ham away as well. So the teams above us as well. the form we're on, maybe. It would be ridiculous. It would be some achievement, but maybe. You know, I've spoke a lot about this season, about comparing it to last season, which one's been better. But I think they're on par with each other right now. Maybe this one surpasses it because of the Carabao Cup semi-final and back-to-back 5-0 wins and a win at Old Trafford and a win against Arsenal, win against Spurs in the Cup as well. But this season's been really good, really fun, just keeping me sane, really, which is quite nice.
Yeah, it takes a lot to keep that particular train on course. But Drew, it's amazing to think, like, if you'd have just, like, coming off the back of what Jack said, after the events of the summer and Mitrovic leaving and the sort of general feeling of despair around the fan base, the feeling that we weren't, like, pushing on as a club, do you feel like now the tables are starting to turn a little bit and we're starting to sort of see the wood from the trees and think, actually, yeah, upon reflection, it's been another really fucking good season?
Yeah, but I would argue that Marco Silva's done that in spite of, what happened in the summer. You know, he's done it with one hand tied behind his back. You know, the only reason that Rodrigo Muniz is firing the way he is at the moment, you know, is down to himself, obviously, of course, but down to the coaching, down to Marco Silva. What, you know, Raul Jimenez had, finally broke his duck and had a purple patch, and who knows what would have happened if he hadn't got sent off and then injured. He could still be doing it as well, and that's down to the coaching. I think it was Luke Sargent on Twitter I saw today just mentions, like, the importance of Silva just can't be overstated at this stage. He really is the secret sauce, and without him, this is a completely different side. This side doesn't happen. This was the transition season, wasn't it? This was the, we've lost our striker, we haven't replaced him, we'll just, you know, fast forward until May and call it a day. But it's amazing how they've carved out moments, and as like Jack says, we actually, if you look at the seasons on next to each other, this one almost surpasses it right at this point, because you've got things like the Carabao Cup semi, and it's just really interesting to try and sort of redress your mindset to being a mid-table Premier League fan and looking for the joy in the little things, because you've had so many years of up and down, and the highs and lows are so tangible and so stark, and then you have to learn and retrain yourself to find the absolute joy in a 3-0 drubbing of Brighton at home on a Saturday in March. And I'm doing pretty well with it, to be honest. I'm feeling pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, there certainly was a lot of joy to be had, Jarms, especially the prime dynamic duo of Harry Wilson and Rodrigo Muniz, who for an afternoon seemed to turn into prime R9 Ronaldo and Rivaldo. It was just unbelievable to watch. Muniz once again just proving, like, to be awkward. And Marco Silva said in his post-match press conference that he's getting stronger. And you can see that with the game time that he's been given. He's obviously putting in the effort at the gym, at training, what have you. But he's just such a handful. I mean, what elements of his game particularly stuck out to you and his overall performance yesterday?
The first goal is a big signifier of the change of his style of play there, because I think the old Rodrigo Muniz probably would have taken that whack from behind and gone straight down. And that's one of the things you've seen, Kyle, of his game. I think when he joined us at the beginning of last year, you saw a guy that was playing for all the fouls. He was throwing himself on the floor, and he wasn't as physical as his body, to be honest, like, indicated him to be. I think you would see someone that would be nudged off the ball pretty quickly, and someone that was used to playing in Brazil where, you have to buy the fouls. And now you're seeing someone that comes out here is incredibly physical. The ball is starting to stick to him more now. He's starting to become a much more of a well-rounded player. And as I say, the first goal was a big signifier of that. To go up against a centre-half as physical and as tall as Adam Webster, win that first header, put your body on the line to win that second header that nudges the ball through to Harry there. I think it's an excellent indicator of the player we've got on our hands here. And I think there's a few people in the fan base that think, well, probably wrote off Rodrigo a bit early. I'm going to be honest, I'm probably one of them. I've thought that we were onto a bit of a losing streak with Rodrigo there. But the last sort of 5-6 games, you've seen a striker that's come on leaps and bounds. And I think, it's the old adage, isn't it? Strikers run on confidence. And the only way you get confidence as a striker is by scoring goals. And, 5-6 is a great platform to go ahead and show, people what they can really do. I think one of the biggest indications of how well he's come on is that some of my friends that support the traditional top six clubs now know all about him. And they've made reference to him specifically on WhatsApp chats this morning, being like, I'd rather have Rodrigo Muniz up front than some of their, you know, star strikers. I mean, one of them is a Man United fan. I was like, I'd rather have Muniz than Rashford. And I was like, that's ridiculous. Imagine that 4 weeks ago.
It's incredible. Also, recently titled
Player of the Month.
Yeah. I mean, and we haven't seen the results of that yet, have we? And I know that some of Fulham Twitter have been like recruiting the Swifties to try and... it's the only way to compete with Arsenal on Twitter is to try and leverage the Swifties.
Oh, absolutely.
It's a moment of internet genius. Drew, would you just like to recap what this was for those that didn't see this on Twitter?
Yeah, so obviously Rodrigo Muniz is up for Player of the Month for the Premier League, and it's a fan-led vote, which we all know is just utter bobbins on social media when you've got the Arsenal fans who seem to be who seem to live on the Bird app, or formerly known as the Bird app. And so a couple of Fulham Twitter accounts have been posting pictures of Ronnie Moons in a Taylor Swift t-shirt to try and leverage all of those Taylor Swift fans and getting him to vote, saying that he's a massive fan of Taylor Swift. So who knows? The vote is still yet to come in, so what the result. So maybe he will get it.
Oh, mate, it'd be genius if it did. I think it was Fulham Born did one tweet. It was just like, fellow Swifty, Rodrigo Muniz has been nominated for Player of the Month. Come on, team, you know what to do. But it would be, it'd be quite, you know, an amazing internet moment, shall we say. I mean, yeah, it's just amazing. I mean, JK, how shit would it be to be Amanda Breuer right now?
Well, I mean, on 75k a week, I think you'd be all right. But, well, maybe not 75, but that's quite a lot. It's obviously difficult because Rodrigo Muniz has just hit form at the wrong time for Brozier. If someone had told me when we signed Brozier that he couldn't get in the team, I'd be like, you're mad, because Raúl Jiménez was injured and Muniz obviously wasn't firing, and now he is. But it's tough. I mean, because he's not a permanent player, this isn't very damaging for us whatsoever. I mean, he goes back to Chelsea at the end of the season. We pay them $4 million, and it's annoying, but it's not the worst thing to ever happen. And Marco said in a press conference a few weeks ago that he wasn't focused on that part of the deal. He's not worried about having to pay Chelsea. He's more worried about having a striker who's capable of scoring Premier League goals. And whether that be Brozier or Muniz, you know, as long as it's contributing to us to getting points and progressing up the league table, I don't think anyone's going to care. Obviously, it's tough for Brozier himself. He literally couldn't get games at Chelsea, hence went out on loan to us. And it's just sod's law that Rodrigo's decided to fire them in and he can't get a game. But I called for him to start against Man United just to get some game time, and he obviously didn't. And you're not going to pick a striker right now in Brozier over a form player like Muniz. It's unlucky, but he's a young lad. He's got a good head on his shoulders, and hopefully he kicks on and just does well from the bench, really.
Yeah, we said it before on the podcast. I think $4 million is a very small price to pay if it means that we're going to be carving out the new Ronaldo. So, may the form continue. Drew, I just want to come on to Harry Wilson for a minute. I thought his performance yesterday was outstanding. I mean, what a finish for the opening goal, latching onto the hard work that Muniz pulled off. And then just as soon as he gets the ball in that area, you just know that it's getting curled in off the left foot. Well, it was just an amazing performance. Well, is there other elements of his game yesterday that really stood out to you at all?
Well, I think with Wilson, it's one of those where we just, we absolutely needed him to come good at this time, because, you know, you're looking at the wings and I think the future is Iwobi and Wilson for us, you know, looking at the long term, you know, if we're not going to bring in some sort of marquee signings, and he can be hot and cold typically, but we all know the player that's there, and we've seen glimpses of it, and actually now he's coming into form just at the right time, the same as us. So it was absolutely wonderful to see, and him linking up with Rodrigo Muniz as well. I mean, absolutely superb. I just never would have thought it. But yeah, Wilson for me, I think is the starter for the last 11 games, and it's just perfect timing for him to come up. His second, which way round was it?
He scored first, and then he put that cross in.
Yeah. So his finish for the first was just absolute chef's kiss, wasn't it? And that is that's the quality that he's got. I think we all know it, and it's just lovely to see him unlock it at the right time.
I would argue that the ball that he put in for Rodrigo Muniz for the second goal was possibly a nicer piece of football than the finish on the goal. It was could not have been more sweetly struck. The timing of the run from Muniz, the header, it was just one of those balls that just seems impossible to defend. It was just a really, really good performance. I totally agree with you, Drew, that I think that he's our starter for the foreseeable future. Ben, were there any other standout performances for you across the team?
Calvin Bassey. I think every time for me recently, it's been Calvin Bassey. I think we look at a team, you know, transformed since he's come back from AFCON. I feel much more confident with the long balls into the box. I feel much more confident with the distribution out the back. And I think the one thing that is huge in comparison from Bassey to Tim Ream is the ability to guard and hold the channel. I think teams often target Tim down that channel and they can't really do it when Bassey's there. And him paired alongside Tosin was just, I think it's, if we can get Tosin signed long-term, I think that becomes our next version of, you know, the Thames barrier. Perhaps I've gone a little bit too much on that statement there, but like, I do think that we get Tosin signed long-term, we keep Bassey, and that becomes, you know, the heart of the defence for a number of years, and Fulham can steadily build around that. I think Bassey is such a brilliant player. I think there were a few naysayers when he joined in the summer, mainly because it didn't work out for him over in Holland, I think it was. But again, the pedigree is there. You know, he got to European Cup finals with Rangers. And, you know, I think he's going to be an excellent player. And that 20 million that we spent on him in the summer now looks incredibly cheap.
And what a horrible start for him as well. Like when he was playing on his unfancied side, and you could just see like that game at Spurs away where he was caught out twice, and it was just, you could just see it wasn't the real Calvin Bassey. And I'm just so pleased to see him sort of exercise those demons quite quickly and show us the player that he is. He just needed to be in his favourite position. Fancy that. But you know, I think. Silva's doing really well as he's looking ahead from not just this season. Kenny Tete's not getting a look in over Castagna because Castagna's going to be our fullback for the foreseeable future. Kenny's going to go, I think. The interesting part is the Tosin stuff, because I'm telling you now, there's absolutely no way Tosin's signing a contract. He's gone in the summer. He knows his worth as a homegrown player. He's going for free. He's going for a fat signing on bonus. He's going to be looking at the top six clubs who might be having managers change over and seeing where he can slot in. He's never staying. So it's interesting that Silva's persisting with Tosin. I know it's slightly different because, you know, we've not... It's not as straightforward as, you know, swapping out Tete for Castagna, but yeah, it's just interesting because I would bet you now 100 grand that he would be gone in the summer. So it's interesting.
What makes you think that Tete is also on the way out, Drew? Just out of interest, just gut feeling, or
I just think his contract's nearly coming to an end, isn't it? And I think for whatever reason it is, Silva either doesn't fancy him, or he thinks he knows he's going to be off, and I think it's probably the latter because Kenny's a quality player. So I just get that feeling that, you know, we've signed Castagna on a long-term contract. He was never coming in to be an understudy, because I think we forget just how good a player he is and has been and was for Leicester. And to say that he's coming in as an understudy, I think was probably a bit fanciful and proved to be wrong. And I just don't know. I just get the vibe that Kenny will be thanked for his services and moved on in the summer.
Jack, you're sort of Jack, you're giving a look there, which implies that you don't fully agree. Well, what's your take?
I agree to an extent, because if his contract's running out in the summer, it would be beneficial to get him tied down to a new contract as soon as possible, really, and then thus committing his future to the club. For him to run down a contract and then we let him go on a free, despite us signing him for like £2 or 3 million, I mean. I actually read this morning that there was a Turkish club interested. I can't actually remember which club it was, but they were interested in his services. But I would like to at least try and make some profit from that transfer. But also, it's beneficial to have two players per position at least. So if we let Tete go for a free, it would mean we'd be in the market for a new right back. And I just think that's a bit counterintuitive when you've already got two very capable ones here right now. I do agree that it's alarming that he hasn't signed a contract by now. However, there's still, you know, a few months to go. And And I think that Tete as an understudy with for Castagna or the other way around is perfect. And I think those two are very capable at this level and have, well, Tete especially has done brilliantly since he's joined Fulham. I mean, really, really good right back. So it'd be a shame to let him go for free. And I would think that would be a bit of a waste, in my opinion.
No, I do totally agree. I mean, I think it's safe to say, Ben, you kind of alluded to it, that this is one of the strongest defensive units that Fulham has seen in recent years. I thought Leno yesterday was back to his Leno of old, confident, commanding, after, you know, maybe, he really hasn't to say it, but not as strong performances as we're used to, given the quality that he is. It was just back to his old self. And it's just Marcus Silva said it, like, for the first half, you've got a centre forward, Brighton have a centre forward in Evan Ferguson, who is, you know, arguably approaching world class. You've got the top sides across the world that are looking at him. He's touted up being worth something like 100 million. Quality striker. And he was limited to one fairly big chance that he put wide in the second half. But they did not have a look in first half. So, I mean, you know, I'd long may it continue. I agree, it'd be great to sign Tete on and, you know, just have that strength and depth. But it's just wonderful to see, really is. So coming up, we've got Wolves away and then Tottenham at home. Given the form that we're in, Ben, what do you reckon? Were you looking at those two fixtures and you're thinking Wolves away? Obviously, O'Neill's got that side performing very well. They're scoring freely, but you've got to think, fancy their chances. And then Tottenham at home, what do you reckon?
I just want to bring it back to probably like a few weeks ago. I think it was after the Burnley 2-2 that I was on the podcast last. And I looked at this run of fixtures. You see United, you see Brighton, you see Spurs in it. You see Wolves, and I guess they're not as dangerous as the other three clubs mentioned. You think, God, we'll be lucky to get out of here with something like 4 points. Now you look at these run of fixtures and you're like, actually, we could get out of here quite easily with somewhere around 9 or 10, because I think we can definitely beat Wolves. I think yesterday, as much as they threatened, they didn't score. And I think they'd like to keep things tight there. And then with Spurs, I think you can definitely get out Spurs. And it depends which Spurs that you get that game. I think yesterday they looked a little bit, you know, a little bit lost in big periods at the time. I think Palace definitely put them under some great pressure. And they're definitely viable to the counter-attack, which Fulham have proved over the last stretch of 3 or 4 games that we're definitely capable of playing and to a really good standard as well. I think the one thing that everyone knows about Spurs is that they have a ridiculously high line with not too many pacey centre-halves. And if you get under the skin of someone like Romero and you get him on a yellow early, I think the game is there for the taking. So I think, you know, Fulham have a great chance to go ahead and get a good number of points here. And I think there are two games that we shouldn't be coming into and feeling in any way scared. And we should actually be targeting two very positive results. And I know that with Silva as manager, we're never going to go into a game and think we're second best. Yes, we're going to adjust and every good team does that. But I don't think we'll approach it in the same way that we did under Parker, for example. We certainly aren't going to be approaching games the same way we did under Ranieri. So I think we will come out fighting. And I think, you know, Fulham, especially with the return of Calvin Bassey, the return of Iwobi, some players coming into good form, and also the return of Adama Traore, who put the icing on the cake yesterday, I think we have a really good chance of getting some points here.
I wanted to come on to Adama Traore and just the substitutes yesterday in general. We obviously, the introduction of Tom Kearney, Breuer and Adama Traore. Jack, just how much fun is it to have a player like that coming off the bench? And it was the tailor-made game for him to come on, given that, you know, Brighton were having to come on us, there was space to exploit, and then to get off the mark, open his account for Fulham. Wonderful to see.
There was so much space to exploit, exactly. And when in those final stages, Brighton were basically committing almost every man forward to try and sort of get a goal back. And then Gross gets the ball in the middle of the park, and I don't know what he's trying to do. He's just trying to sort of turn away, and Bobby reads it really well. There isn't a better player you want running free or running at a tight defence than Adama Traore. And we've actually spoke at length about his composure and, like, you know, the chance he had against Villa, which he missed, the chance he had against Arsenal, which he missed. And then to have the composure last week to find Iwobi for the winning goal. and the composure to finish pretty calmly as well past Steele to make it 3-0. I mean, he's just the perfect impact sub, because whether you're chasing a game like we were against Villa, drawing a game like we were against Man United, or winning a game against Brighton yesterday, his threat going forward, he's just going to cause chaos for tiring defenders. And it's good that he sort of, last week he took on players against Manchester United, and this time he had a free run at goal, and it was an incredible finish. Well, I mean, it wasn't incredible. It was a good finish from a player who is just so good at exploiting that space. And Bobby did really well to win the ball back. And Adama Traore is a player who can make a huge difference for us for the rest of the season off the bench. I mean, we've seen in the last 2 weeks now. I mean, superb, just really, really fun.
Mm. I made a comparison on last week's podcast following the United win, Drew, to Adama Traore being a fairly similar player that Manus Solomon was for us last year. And you know just how good he was, injured for huge parts of the season. But when he came on, it's just so exciting. And he always felt like he was able to do something. Given what we've seen so far, I know it's obviously a bit soon and there are a lot of kind of unknowns, and it will ultimately probably come down to his fitness. But we've got him on a 1-year deal. If you're Marco, are you renewing that given what we've seen? I mean, I'm all for it. I think he's just a lot of fun to watch and, you know, a real kind of live wire. But maybe you have approaching it with a little bit more sort of head rather than heart. What would you do?
No, I think it would be a no-brainer and negligent not to tie it down. You know, we got him on a free, and you know, he's still relatively young, 28 years old, and it's great to have different weapons at your disposal. You know, like, for example, you know, I'm not comparing the two players at all, but people used to like Kamara, for example. Abu Kamara, like, was seen as a bit of a comical player, but like, he was a live wire, he was a haymaker, and like, you could play him and you'd have a sort of something a little bit different. And I see that with Adama. We haven't got a player who can, you know, just send him on at 80 minutes and then just, you just saw it again at the weekend with his goal. It was so similar to the assist he got for Iwobi, just like charge forward. I think it was Peter Rutcher, wasn't it? He said, man runs faster than other men. Like, it's great. It's a blunt tool, but he's got the finishing as well to go with it. So it's like, you know, I just think it's a superb thing to have in your arsenal. And it'd be silly just to, it's almost like NFL-like, isn't it? You get players who do specific things exceptionally well, and you know, why not just use him as the battering ram in the final 10 minutes? You know, it could be to add the third goal of a 3-0 gubbing, or it could be to grab an equaliser or a winner. You know, it's great. Keep him, for sure.
Yeah, I think in the previous three games, there's been a big underlining of what he can offer, especially in the later stages of games. Obviously, setting up the goal against United, scoring yesterday, and then I think it was the game before, there was an opportunity where he was slipped in down the channel and he missed a one-on-one with the keeper. But I think there's definitely some big highlights there from us. If we can get the best out of Adama, you can see how much of a destructive player he's been throughout his career. So just about getting him back on the right track. And what's the harm of giving him another year? I don't think there is one.
Can I just ask, before we move on to part two and some of your questions, given the calibre and quality of the opposition, I know they weren't at the races and they got injuries, etc., etc., but do you think there's an argument here, Jack, that Saturday's win against Brighton was our most complete performance of the season? Given the way that Brighton were closed out, defensively, we were so solid. We were clinical with the goals. Game management was exceptional. It was a pretty flawless performance. I mean, I know you've got the 5-0s against West Ham, but they were terrible that day and arguably not as strong a side as this Brighton team. And United, yes, it's United. Yes, it's at Old Trafford, but they've got their issues that we've been over at length. Do you think there's an argument that potentially that was the most complete performance?
I think if you'd asked Marco, was that the most complete performance of the season, I think he'd say yes. I mean, you can look at the game against West Ham, which was a 5-0 win, and West Ham were actually quite competitive in the first half. They had a few chances. Jared Bowen definitely causing us a few issues. Nottingham Forest were really poor when we won 5-0. So again, it was more of a one-sided affair. But Brighton, and we know the calibre of how Brighton can play as well and the chances they can create. And they did have their chances, let's not forget. I mean, Evan Ferguson, and in the second half, they hit the post as well. They had a couple of shots over in the first half as well. I think, yeah, it was the fact we got a clean sheet, you know, two goals in the first half, one to seal it in the second half, pretty much sort of just let them have the ball and sort of soak up the pressure and then hit them on the break. This is sort of the perfect game plan against a Brighton team who love to have the ball. And we took our chances. We were clinical in the final third and just shut them out, and Leno made a couple of decent sacks. Yeah, definitely. If you rattle through it and you think about complete performances, then yeah, it was complete. It was a complete performance. And if I'm at the next press conference, I think that's what I'll ask Marco. Was that the most complete performance of the season? Then we can actually have an answer.
Great. Well, what a lovely note to end part one on. Don't go anywhere because we'll be back with some of your questions.
This is an advertisement for BetterHelp, a portal for finding online therapy. How's your social battery right now? If you feel a bit drained or lacking enthusiasm to meet all the social commitments in your life, then that can be a totally normal thing, especially with things picking up as we head out of winter. I know that pretty frequently a weekend just doing a few chores and watching the football was about the limit of my energy resources, but therapy can be a place to help you gain the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your batteries. Contrary to popular belief, therapy isn't just for those who have experienced major trauma. The overall goal is to empower you to be the best version of yourself. And if therapy is something you've considered, then why not give BetterHelp a try? BetterHelp is entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. They'll match you with a UK mental health professional with a wide variety of expertise. There's no referral needed, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge, giving you complete control over the whole experience. Fulhamish listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/fulhamish. That's betterhelp.com/fulhamish.
Welcome back to the Fulhamish Podcast. I'm joined by Jarms, JK and Drew. Before we get into your questions, just a quick word from NordVPN. We'd like to say a massive thank you to them for sponsoring this episode of Fulhamish. You can use NordVPN for many reasons. Let's face it, most of us use it to watch football in some capacity. But just the other day, I had a little peep on US Netflix to see what they had that the UK didn't offer. And there's way more shows you can do that. You just switch a location to the US and then load Netflix as normal. And you get all of the shows they've got on there. I mean, I use it every day with work. It's incredibly easy to use. You can use one account on up to 6 devices, and you can also try it for 30 days commitment free thanks to Nord's 30-day money back guarantee. So you've literally got nothing to lose. And also, right now, Fulhamish listeners can get a discount for 4 free months by going to nordvpn.com/Fulhamish. Plus, if you're in the UK, USA, Australia, or Canada, like our good friend Benjamin here, you can get an Uber Eats voucher when you sign up using that link.
I must admit, I used NordVPN last night to watch Match of the Day.
There you go. See, an endorsement from one and only Benjamin. Did you get your Uber Eats voucher as well with that?
I did indeed, yes. I used it on some Malaysian chicken. It was very good.
There you go. What more reason do you need? So that's a great rate, 4 months free, and an Uber Eats voucher in participating countries. So all you need to do is go to nordvpn.com/Fulhamish. Right, thank you for everybody who got in touch with some questions. We've got a question here from Joe Healy. I'm going to chuck this one to you, Drew, because I know you're familiar with Joey. He says, and also this one's, I think, perfect for you, given your TC loyalty over the years. A guy who sits behind me in H5 has a lot to say about TC and his general play for Fulham not being good enough. Can the panel please explain why this guy is totally wrong? And then he said, brackets, no, the guy looked like Dennis Wise, so I assume he's Chelsky in disguise. Drew, why is a disguised Dennis Wise totally wrong?
This guy fully was riling him up yesterday, living in his suite rent free. It was just completely wrong, isn't it? Tom Kearney is having perhaps one of his best seasons in a Fulham shirt. I don't think it's too much of a stretch to suggest that it is one of his top three seasons at the club, just in terms of the level that he's performing at, the evolution from, you know, super sub to starter. Is one of his best. So, it's just one of those things, isn't it? I think some people like to try and zag when others zig just for the sake of it. But this guy wasn't even backing it up. It was just fueled by the Camden Hells from the Hammy End concourse. So I wouldn't worry too much about that. But I think this will go down as probably top three
seasons for Tom Kearney. And, you know, everybody knows what I think about the man. I'm super glad to see him on Sky Sports every week too. So we'll keep seeing him when he hangs up his boots. But what a player, what a guy, what a Fulham legend. Like, you know, we always talk about modern day statues and he's going to be the closest, right? You know, Mitro dropped out of the race and, you know, people say, oh, you got to win a trophy. You got to do this, mate. Johnny Haynes never won a trophy. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, it's not a prerequisite for a statue, not having it whatsoever. Start building it. Don't make it a papier-mâché one, please.
Should we book in the all-day session for the Tom Kearney testimonial, Drew? It's going to be a big day in the calendar, isn't it?
That is going to be big, yeah. I'm going to have to get my drinking boots on for that one.
Here's a question for you. Dream inclusion, Fulham player in the Tom Kearney testimonial. Who would you love to see? Who'd be first on the team sheet? Yeah.
Oh, God. Johan Mollo.
Yeah, he just brings back the banter era for old time's sake.
It's gonna be one
Ben
of the
Pringle,
old
Pringle. The Gaffer's manager.
Or something.
Yeah, oh, that'd be amazing. Jarv's got a question for you here. This is from Matt. There's something to be said for players who have been given a run in the sides and played themselves into form. Obviously, we were talking about our Brazilian centre forwards earlier in the podcast, but Lukic has come into the side cold and has played very well. Given the rumours that he wanted to leave in January, could he make a position in the Fulham midfield his own after all? Another very tidy performance from Lukic yesterday. He wasn't arguably as influential as he was in the Man U game, but still incredibly solid, did exactly what he was asked of him. I mean, we've got obviously João Palhinha, who I think we all agree is our best player coming back into the side following his suspension. But, I mean, do you think we can expect to see Lukic feature a little bit more?
Honestly, I think we can. I think also, one thing that Lukic brings that others don't is just that quality in ball progression. That maybe, you know, Harrison Reed obviously has the work rate, TC has the quick feet and the ability to unlock defences. But I think Lukic has the ability to progress the ball with his legs a little bit more than maybe some of the other guys do. I think he's had two exceptional games. He looks like a shadow of his former self, to be honest with you. When he first started playing with us, I think he was, in the same way that I talked about Muniz earlier, he was a little bit light on his feet. He was often brushed off the ball. He wasn't really imposing himself on games. And I think the last two have been a marked difference in all of those aspects and more. So I think that he definitely now, you know, deserves a run in the short term over these next like four or five games to see how he really starts to adapt into the squad. I think I said it a few times on the pod. With Marco Silva's way of playing, I feel like it always takes the players like 6 months, 9 months to really understand what he wants, both positionally and in terms of their roles and responsibilities. And I think that's been no different from Lukic. And obviously, like, trying to transition from Serie A into the Premier League is one of the biggest and most and the hardest transition in European football. It's very rare now that you can think of someone that transferred from Italy and has really hit the ground running. Like, no one that I can think of, unless I'm missing a distinctly obvious one, has come over from Italy and, like, set the ground alight. And, you know, Lukic, as I said, is having to have this bedding in period where he's understanding the game, understanding the Premier League. And, you know, that can come at you quick sometimes. But I'm glad to see that he's adjusting now.
Really, really tidy footballer. And it'll be really interesting to see how Marco sort of integrates the tools that we have at our disposal for the forthcoming games. Got another question for you here, JK. This one's from Daniel. He says, do you think Wilson seems to play so much better when Willian isn't playing? I can't say it's something that I'd particularly noticed, but is that something that you can speak on?
I have not noticed one jot. However, there's something to be said about the relationship between Robinson and Willian down the left-hand side, but Castagna and Wilson have a nice little chemistry down the right-hand side. So I just think Harry Wilson, whenever he's played this season, in fact, there's been loads of instances where he's been on the bench and hasn't come on at the right time or got enough minutes, in my opinion, in games that we needed him in or we needed to get back in the game. But I think Harry Wilson has slowly becoming one of my favourite players in the squad, I think. The quality he possesses, the goal and the assist yesterday was just amazing. Like, honestly, he's got such a good left foot, and we're really lucky to have him. And, you know, when he signed the first time, you know, when he first came to the club or in the Championship, I was thinking, bloody hell, that's a really good signing for the Championship. And he was brilliant. I mean, him and Cabano, Mitrovic, it was just ridiculous, like the threat we had going forward. But then, of course, obviously he's played Premier League minutes for Bournemouth, and we were thinking, oh, we go up, you know, is Wilson going to be good enough for the Premier League? And yes, sir. Like, he's very, very good. And he's proving it again this season. Again, great contributions on the pitch. Lovely guy off the pitch, apparently. So, yeah, very happy. But to answer the actual question, I haven't noticed. I'm sorry.
Fair enough. It just seems to be such a, you say about being a lovely guy off the field, they're such a good sort of positive vibe about the squad right now. And Matt Wall alludes to this in this next question, Drew. He says, have you noticed the big celebrations in our squad? Cassagna, Reed, Leno and Bassi all giving big celebrations. William TC and Raul less bothered. I would argue that Raul's incredibly, you know, vociferous when he's celebrating, especially those goals that, you know, marked the end of his Baron spell. He says, I love how much Timmy C celebrates every goal. He loves it. Any of you notice this? Drew, is this something that you've picked up on, the sort of big squad celebrations and I guess like overall togetherness of the squad?
Oh, the vibes at the moment are exceptional, aren't they? And I think they've been really quite good throughout the good times and the bad recent, you know, in recent years at the club. You always see, you know, with that nucleus, so we're talking about TC and, you know, Cabano and Odoi and, you know, all of that. But now, especially, yeah, you've got these different, not even cliques because they're bringing everybody together, but you've got these different pockets, you know, the Nigerian lads, the South American lads, and, you know, you've got all of these different sort of elements coming together as a whole. And you know, it's good to see, you know, the content the club puts out in terms of the behind the scenes stuff that you see is also really good. And it's just, you know, thank God for it, really. When you're looking at some of the stuff that happens off the pitch that just makes you want to hit your head against a brick wall, you know, the bond between the fans and the players and Marco Silva has never been stronger in the certainly the nigh on 30 years I can remember. So, you know, it's really nice to see. I love being a part of it. I love going to see him every week. And yeah, if you can get some nice choreographed celebrations, you know, the Brazilians are great for, aren't they, with the baby, rocking the babies and all this. I think Muniz has just been waiting for his little run. They're just going to get more and more elaborate, aren't they, as time goes on, hopefully.
Yeah, I must confess that I caught myself in my living room yesterday trying to, much like a 14-year-old girl trying to master a new TikTok dance, try to master the Iwobi celebration, which is, I believe it's the arrow over the head and then the step back with the two step. I still haven't quite got it nailed down, but I will get there eventually.
He used to do like the big, like over the head rifle.
Like, yeah, that's the one that I was trying to get down. And yeah, then, and then it's not, the kind of like apology kind of stance.
It's, yeah, he's changed it. When he first burst onto the scene for Arsenal, he used to get down on one knee and do almost like a machine gun into the crowd, and he would shout "Big 17" afterwards. Now it's like the bow and the thing, the apology thing.
What's next to Stores? A little less aggressive on the weapons.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, I hope you'll get to see it a lot more times. Ben, we got a few questions that refer to Marco's selection headache for Wolves, because obviously we're back-to-back victories, our first back-to-back victory since December. Jack Smith says, well, Pelinha coming back from suspension next week, does he start versus Wolves, or does Marco named an unchained squad? And Black, White and Fred also says, just does JP sit on the bench for Wolves? If not, who are you going to drop? It's hard to break up a winning 11. Where do you stand on this question, Jarms?
I think he comes straight back in immediately. I don't think there's much of a argument against him being put back into the team. Like, I understand that we've had two wins on the bounce and the replacements have been excellent in the wake of his suspension. But he is head and shoulders our best player by a long way. Why would you not play him? He's had punishment enough by having a two-match suspension. I think that there'll be a couple of changes. I would like to see kind of like a double pivot of Lukic and Palhinha, give Lukic a bit more freedom to go ahead and progress the ball and really try and see if he can put his stamp on the game. And maybe alongside Kenny as well. I think that'd be a nice progressive midfield three against Wolves, who try and pack out the middle and try and squeeze you in wide areas. You know, I think that would be a really nice threesome in the middle there.
Certainly would be. We've got a question here from Ibs Drew. We were speaking about Cassagna. What's funny?
I love Ibs. He's like my favourite Fulham fan on Twitter.
one of the best Twitter accounts you can get your hands on.
What in particular do you love about him, Jack?
Was the question about Brentford by any chance?
No, it wasn't about Brentford. It's about Chestnuts.
Oh, was it about Newcastle United?
No.
Was it about, who else does he hate? Villa?
Yeah. Cult hero Ibs. Shout out to Ibs. This question in particular was not about the aforementioned clubs. It's about Timmy Chestnut's Cassagna. So Joey says, what do you make of Cassagna? His stamina ability going forward and 7 out of 10 of defending abilities made him an unsung hero. Tete may be the reason we stay up comfortably, but Cassagna may be one of the reasons we take the next steps. He seems to be involved with everything. So I guess the question that we can carve out of this one, Drew, is do you believe that Cassagna is an improvement on Kenny Tete? I love Kenny Tete. I think he's one of the best one-on-one defenders in the league. He's been instrumental in everything that's been good about this Fulham side over these last years. Even when we were terrible in the Premier League, he was there and performing. I absolutely love Kenny Tete. I also love Timmy Chestnuts. I know you were saying earlier that it could be sort of contractual reasons why we're seeing Timmy favoured, but if you were to pick out of the two, who would you go for?
I mean, I think Ibs is completely right in terms of, Tete may be the reason we stay up comfortably, but Cassagna may be one of the reasons we take the next steps. Who would I prefer? I mean, I think I hate to use the word sexy, but Tete is a sexier player. Not just look wise, actually, but
he's got that lovely smile, isn't he?
Yeah. In terms of the football that he plays and how it's instantly. We talk about Cassagna being the unsung hero. It's like his style of play isn't exactly the sort of the thing that sticks out. It's not very eye catching. Whereas Kenny can burst forward, can whack across in, and he's got all of that blazing glory. And so he's immediately more attractive on the eye in terms of watching the game. But I just think Castagna's fingerprints are on so much of what's good at the moment with this side. And I guess the way I could put it to answer the question is I'm completely comfortable with a Timmy Cassagna based future. And I didn't think I'd say that, 6 months ago. So that's a good position to be in, I guess.
He reminds me a lot of, do you remember when we had Sasha Reitha at right back, and he was just an incredibly accomplished, very tidy, rarely made any flaws, amazing stamina, used to really put in a shift and rarely put a foot wrong. There's a lot of similarities, I think, between the two players. But yeah, I mean, long may the form continue. We got a question here, Jack, from DJ Clarkey. Now, Jack, I know you sit in the press box every now and then. Perhaps you've got some whisperings behind the scenes. But DJ Clarkey asks, yes, when the Tannoy announces things about Mr. Bishop, what is the code for? So for those of you who weren't at the game yesterday, and it's happened a few times this season, it seems to be getting more and more flamboyant as well. There's quite like grand announcements saying, will Mr. Bishop please report to H5? And then about 20 minutes later, they'll be like, Mr. Bishop has left the building.
It's quite dramatic, like this, isn't it?
It's very, if anything, I feel like it's got more dramatic since we first noticed this. I think we named the podcast a few months ago, The Mysterious Mr. Bishop. I think it was after the Chelsea game. But yeah, have you got any fun theories about who Mr. Bishop is and where he's going?
No, I mean, it must be some sort of security thing. I mean, when I was at... when I was at university at Wembley, every time we'd be in the stadium, there'd be a security check, and it would be something very similar like that. It would be something like Mr. I actually can't remember the name of it now, but in a very boring way. I think it's quite like it's a more of a security thing. Maybe there was some sort of something looking suspicious. I honestly don't know what it is. I might actually ask next time I'm there. I'll say, who is this mysterious Mr. Bishop you keep announcing to 25,000 people every Saturday? But I'm guessing the name Bishop is because of Bishop's Park. or it's just a complete coincidence. I've got no idea. But very, very fun, very strange. And my favorite one is when, it's just every so often, it's like midway through a first half, and they go, oh, ladies and gentlemen, Craven Cottage is an all-seater stadium. And like everyone who's standing up, boo, boo. But that's all I've got to say on the matter, really. But I will try and find out and let the people know.
Yeah, I feel like the boring logical answer is that it's some kind of security announcement. Yeah. We probably shouldn't really be talking about it on a podcast, but I just think that you can mix it up a little bit. I kind of want to ask, like, who is Mr. Bishop? Wrong answers only.
Billy the Badger.
We'll read the funniest answers. I do love the passive aggressive sort of nature of the Fulham is an all seater stadium, because it's not saying like sit the fuck down. It's being like, guys. But yeah. Anyway, on that note, I think we may as well wrap up proceedings. Jack, before we do, have you got a favourite three-word review that you'd like to go for?
I think James Wilson, the fact he put eight in. No, I can't count. He put seven in. Yeah.
Yeah, we got.
Surely he's got to have one of them. 10
marks for effort.
Yeah.
So if you throw enough shit at a wall, some of it sticks.
I'm gonna go with a golden afternoon, because it was the complete performance, like we said, clean sheet against the Seagulls, a golden afternoon. Very nice from James Wilson. Nice one.
Amazing.
I just looked at Coops then, and I don't think he heard golden. So he's just looking at like a golden afternoon. That's crap.
I was like, I mean, I know he's put seven in, but I think we could do a bit better than that.
Golden. But
yeah, I get it now. I get it. is there any listenership on the planet that's better at sort of football team nickname based puns than the Fulhamish listeners? I think not. But anyway, it's been a lot of fun. Another wonderful, wonderful victory. Sammy will be back on Thursday with a final word on what was a brilliant win, and then looking ahead to that Wolves game at the Molyneux. Maybe slightly more chilly affair than the repeat fixture last year, where people were burnt to a crisp by those flame flowers. But anyone making the trip up to Wolverhampton, safe journey and have a great week. Thank you very much, Drew Healy.
Thank you, Coops.
Thanks for your time, Jarms.
Thanks, Coops.
Always a pleasure, Jack.
Thank you, George. Cheers.
You-ites.
You-ites.